Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. If we are going to survive, that means that we have to decide who we are. That's so basic, so obvious, so essential, that it's amazing how few people give much thought to it. The blacks have very little trouble deciding who they are. They know at a glance. They know by instinct. And primitive as they may be, they are racially minded to a degree that white folks would envy if white folks had an ounce of sense. What do you think Ferguson was all about? What do you think block voting is all about? Race comes first for them, and they feel it in their bones. Similarly, the nation of Azatlan folks know who is one of their own and who isn't. They call all white folks colonizers, even Spanish-speaking whites, and they say that North America is their continent, not ours. They demand territory, exclusive territory, so their race can have food and living space and self-government. They may differ on economics and on the ideal social structure they'd like to see in the new nation they intend to carve out of the United States, but they all agree that they need to carve out that nation, and they all agree that that nation will belong to their race and their race alone. That's essential. Everything else is debatable. Racial identity is paramount. They are a race which intends to survive. Similarly, East Asian peoples have a very strong sense of peoplehood. They maintain their racial integrity, and there is a vanishingly small percentage of non-Asian immigration to their homelands. They know who they are. With almost no exceptions, they define themselves in terms of ancestry. Reverence for one's ancestors is a powerful tradition among Asians, and the genetic integrity of their nations is secure. But ask a few white Americans or Europeans to define their people, to define who we are, and you will get such a mass of contradictory answers that you'll quickly give up on getting any consistent response to your question. You'll probably get more rational answers from other races if you ask them to define who we are. Other races have long, and quite rationally, regarded the white West as a racial and cultural unity. Part of white confusion about who we are is no doubt due to the omnipresent propaganda of the Jewish-controlled media and educational establishments, which says that race does not exist, that racial mixing is desirable, and that white identity is the sine qua non of all evil in the world. This propaganda undoubtedly does real damage to white psyches and to innocent young white souls. And the promoters of such propaganda deserve whatever measures it takes to stop their hateful lies. But their propaganda does not fully explain the confusion of whites about their identity. Part of the confusion about our identity is religious in nature. In the dying, decadent days of the majestic classical civilization created by our race, the indigenous religion of that civilization was defeated, destroyed, and supplanted by Christianity, which had originally sprung from Jewish roots and then spread among the slave population to the increasingly cosmopolitan and proletarian citizenry. In a couple of centuries, Christianity became the state religion of Rome. When healthier white tribes from the north invaded and eventually occupied Rome, many of them were undoubtedly awed by the culture, technology, architecture, and monumental art of the defeated empire. They mistakenly associated these great achievements of our race with the recently adopted religion of Christianity, and naturally the chief Christian priest or Pope of Rome, anxious to preserve the wealth and power of his institution, did not disabuse them of this misconception. Thus, many of the relatively uncultured northern invaders, overawed by the remnants of Rome's grandeur and greatness, were converted to a belief in what they thought was the god of the men who had built this astonishing city. In addition to these sincere conversions, there were other sincere conversions based on a true belief in the westernized Christian doctrines eventually preached all over Europe, or on the qualities of the Christian's Bible, which, unlike the more poetic and fanciful classical or related Nordic myths, claimed to be an accurate historical record of events that actually happened in the real world. It is true, of course, that the classical religion gave birth to some of the most profound philosophies that the world has ever seen, but these were of interest primarily to an elite minority of a ruling class that was already in steep decline when pure power politics allied itself with the rising Semitic cult and seized power. They had no power and probably close to zero visibility by the time Rome fell. All the remaining Roman philosophy schools had been ordered closed by the Christians in 529 AD, and most of their learning was lost forever. And it is commonplace knowledge that many conversions to Christianity were made by the sword, and that thousands were killed who would not submit. Over a few centuries, Christianity achieved what no other religion had done before. It brought all Europe and almost all of our race under one religion, a remarkable achievement which had many benefits, not the least of which was a realization of cultural unity and a doctrinal basis to unite all white tribes against common racial enemies, who naturally also had alien religions. It was under the banner of Christianity that Charles Martel defeated the Muslims at Tours, and that the Moors were finally expelled from Europe by the troops of Ferdinand and Isabella. With geographic Europe and racial Europe almost universally Christian, Europe became Christendom. And for all practical purposes, the white race thought of itself as Christendom. And although in a diminished sense, many of us still think that way today. Even Lawrence Brown, author of the thought-provoking work The Might of the West, defined us as the descendants of those who were Catholic in 1492, with some additions, also Christian. It's hard not to be emotionally moved by the racially healthy aspects of Christian ritual and culture. The all-white children's choir singing Mozart's Requiem, or the intensely spiritual works of Bach or Handel, the magnificent Gothic cathedral, or the white country church at the foot of the mountain, the upright moral folk who peopled the vastness of the American plains and made the greatest republic in history. I am moved by these things myself. But these things are in their essence more white than they are Christian. Without the white race, they could never have existed, even if Christianity had taken root among other races. The source of Mozart's music and the vast arches, lights, and spaces of Gothic temples was not in doctrine, not in scripture, but in our genes. That is one reason we must define ourselves in racial terms, in genetic terms, or we and everything we built and everything we love will die. That is why white Christians must put race first, even above their beloved religion. They must agree with other white nationalists that what we are is white. What we are is the European race. What we are is defined in biological terms, and that what we are fighting for is the survival of that racial heritage and the culture that our race created, and that it alone can sustain and move forward to its destiny. Race comes first. Race is how we must define ourselves. Whites of other religions are still us. Non-whites, even if they share our religious beliefs, can never be us. Any other approach is suicide. Defining ourselves in religious terms would mean that, one, Koreans or Jews, etc., who convert to our religion are us too. And two, that most Mexicans, for example, are us now. That's giving up the game, lying down and accepting racial death. If 1,000 years from now, some part whites survive and they practice Christianity, that's defeat, not victory. It would be no better than defining ourselves in civic nationalist terms. If a few part whites survive and call themselves Americans, that's defeat too. It's death. Our race not only existed before Christianity existed, making it impossible for that to be our defining characteristic, but we existed before any known religion came into being. Before Darwin and Mendel and Crick and Watson, we may not have known our distant history or the physical mechanism behind our identity as whites. Before the rise of Jewish power in the 20th century, we may not have seen clearly that the Jews are a profoundly alien intrusion into our nations. But we did feel something in our souls, in our blood, if you will, that made us recognize our racial identity and racial unity. The United States Congress in 1790 did make being a quote-unquote free white person a requirement for becoming a citizen of the United States, a legal requirement which remained in force for 162 years. The founders of this nation saw what was essential and acted on it. They had an implicit white racial consciousness that was made explicit in the laws of the land, though we can see clearly now that it was not explicit enough. Unfortunately, the founders had little or no conception of the non-white nature of the Jew, and that was the one flaw that allowed the mass immigration of Jews in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And that alien and racially conscious group proceeded to use all of its cleverness and all of its wealth to destroy the nascent racial consciousness of whites and to erase the laws of our forefathers which protected our race from non-white immigration and intermarriage. Some have argued that identifying ourselves as Christians might have prevented the mistakes of considering Jews to be white and of allowing them free access to our society, but I do not agree with that position. As in Spain 500 years ago, Jews could just have had themselves sprinkled with holy water and claimed to believe in the right doctrines, and the religious barrier could have been easily overcome. And furthermore, the Jewish connection to Christianity has most often worked in the Jews' favor, making religious and secular Christian leaders alike view Jews with misplaced sympathy, or, as in the case of the insane Christian Zionists, with outright worship. The exalted beauty, dare I say whiteness, of the religious services I talked about, or the lovely and moving Easter service at a New England church a respected lady told me about in a recent letter, could only exist in a white world. If our people had never taken up the cross and had remained true to the Eleusinian mysteries and the pantheon of Hellas, if Pan or Freya were still invoked in the forest temples of our homelands, our cathedrals would be just as beautiful, our children's choirs just as angelic, our Easter rituals just as life-affirming, our love of nature's God just as pure or purer. But non-whites, no matter what their creed, are incapable of these things. They do not possess our spiritual essence. One thinks of black churches, and their very different, if no less sincere, ambiance and spirituality. I do not advocate a return to the old religions. Far from it. But the key to our spirituality, the key to what we are, is within ourselves and is therefore within our genes. It is not found in any creed we inherited from other peoples or one that can be adopted by anybody. We must regain a sense of racial consciousness, which is the heritage of the old America and the founders, and we must refine it with the lessons we have learned in the last century. We desperately need to regain that sense of identity again. Beliefs can change in a decade or even in a moment. We whites must change our beliefs, that's for sure, but they cannot define who we are. We cannot define ourselves in any way which allows the racial alien to claim to convert by reciting a few words and become one of us. We've been down that road and learned that lesson. Our identity must be based not on what we believe, as important as that may be. It must be based on what we actually are. Only then can what we are, our defining essence, and the source of all that we create and all that we love and all that our descendants will create and love in the future, survive and achieve its destiny. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. You can join and support us by visiting natall.com, that's natall.com, or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have